Welcome to Help from Future Self.
Hey Archons, what's going on? Welcome to Help from Future Self, the conversational Keyforge podcast by and for Keyforge friends. I'm your host this week. My name is Blake, if you don't know. And I'm joined, of course, by the illustrious SC Steele. What is going on, Sydney?
Oh my gosh, so much. So much is going on. Everything is wonderful and fantastic, and so much is going on.
Yes, and you're back. You had a bit of a trip over to my side of the border, not my side of the map. How was that?
It was absolutely amazing. I absolutely wanted to thank the French-Canadian community for inviting me in and getting a little get-together. And it was at this really, really adorable little bar that called like the Shop Goblin. And everything was in French. It was so fantastic. And we had six people show up and we played a Swiss, three rounds of Keyforge. And I got to meet some people in the Canadian community and everyone was so nice and wonderful. And it was a fantastic beginning to my trip. Like I literally, my plane landed. We drove from Montreal to Quebec. And then like before checking into the hotel, my girlfriends dropped me off at the Shop Goblin and they went on to check into the hotel when I played Keyforge. So it was
amazing.
Oh,
that's epic. That's so cool. All right. So there was some news articles that dropped this past week, giving us some information in all kinds of ways on a variety of topics. It was a very article heavy week, which was kind of nice. Sydney, why don't you let our listeners know what the articles were about essentially.
Cool. So I'm just going to point out two of them since there were so many. I'm going to point out two of them that really matter. So they announced that you can request kits to throw a national championship. So this coming weekend, and as you hear this coming weekend is going to be Gen Con, the American National Championship, but there are other nations that can, you know, have national championships as well. And so they have the ability to request and apply for the kit, and they get, there's a lot of stuff that comes in this kit. It's really cool. So go ahead and apply, like get in there, have a national championship. And
yeah, I want to see a Nordic national championship. Zeramis calling out to you, buddy. You should get that going.
Absolutely. Especially with how robust that community is. And so that also that way I can meet him in person and he can fly to America for the world. But yeah, one of the other articles that came out is specifically about Gen Con. So Gen Con is happening this coming weekend, and it has a whole setup, and it's being treated like a vault, even though it isn't a vault. And it also is, because it's at a convention, there's a lot of other stuff going on. Like they'll have a booth there in the exhibit hall of the convention itself, which is separate from where they'll be having their events. And so I will also be there. So if you're going to be at Gen Con, you might be able to stop by the booth. And if I'm not demoing Keyforge there, then I will probably be in the area where we're playing Keyforge. And if it's in the evening and neither are open, find me in the social deduction room.
All right. Don't bombard Sydney. She's trying to have fun at Gen Con, okay? We know her fame is rising to critical mass, but she's also just a normal human. And she's trying to just nerd out at Gen Con.
I will do my best to be a normal human, but the adrenaline of being at a convention, I like zero sleep is my default for Gen Con, let alone now that Keyforge is back at Gen Con and all of the cool stuff is happening. But the last thing I wanted to mention before we jump into our topic today is we are really interested in doing an Ask Me Anything, an AMA episode. So we're actually soliciting questions from you, our listeners, to ask us anything you want to ask us. If you post those questions in the Help from Future Self channel in our Discord, we will pick as many as we can fit, and all the ones that we love, we'll fit that into an episode and answer all your questions. And they can be about anything from Keyforge to our personal lives. Just know that we have final say on which questions we answer. But the cutoff to ask those questions will be Sunday the 13th
of August.
Yes, in August, Sunday, August the 13th. After you ask them all, we will gather them up and answer them and give you all our answers in as fun and concise a way as we can.
Indeed, yes. Looking forward to that one. That should be great.
Awesome. So one of the things that we wanted to bring to you today, that the topic of our episode today is going to be building an alliance deck. And I know we've chatted about this before, but we have had so much experience doing it since we last chatted about this.
Yeah, it's definitely something that Sydney and I love. I've always been I've enjoyed the tinkering aspect and more so in a, I think I don't know if it's the tinkering. I enjoy the looking at decks and finding interesting things in them aspect of it, which I'll go into a little bit further detail when we go into this. So this is going to be really fun. And I know Sydney and I mean, Sydney is basically an Alliance convert. She was not for it. And now she is almost like the heralded savior of Alliance, we'll call it, because she's the one who's getting people also excited about Alliance, which is fantastic. But before we jump into this topic, be sure to listen until the end, because this week we will be announcing the winner of a Winds of Exchange display. So be sure to hear to the end to see if you were a possible winner.
Absolutely. And I did want to thank Fighting Walloon in our Discord for being slightly a small portion of the inspiration for this episode, because they specifically asked me, like, knowing that I play a lot of Alliance, like, what are some of my favorite things about Alliance? And I think I wrote a book, and I kind of feel bad for like that block of text in our Discord that took up like a whole scroll of my phone. But like, I wanted to thank you, Fighting Walloon, for asking me that, because like, I have so much to say. So you are a sealed Alliance expert.
I don't know if I'd say expert. I just have a system. That's all it is. And I'm going to put the system to the test. When you're hearing this, it is before I attend the pre-release, but, well, while you're hearing this, it's after, but while we're recording, it is before I've attended the pre-release. But this is basically what I will be doing going into pre-release weekend. I created a visual aid to this, which was a video on my YouTube channel, and it was basically prepping for a pre-release weekend. And so I took three Winds of Exchange decks and I opened them and I went about it in a very methodical way, which I think is fantastic for any sort of sealed Alliance, not just Winds of Exchange. So why don't I give you a little bit of a rundown of what it is? So the way you need to do this is, when you go to an event with Sealed Alliance, is you need to bring a notepad with you. That is step one, most important step, is have a notepad.
I like it. Old school.
Yes. I mean, you could use your phone if you wanted to, but I just like writing things out and having that visual look, and you'll understand why as I go on. So what I would do is I'll open each deck and I am going to go through the 12 cards and just go, blah, 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 blah. Okay, here's the first house in the deck. Put it down to the side. Next house in the deck, put it down to the side. I'm basically going to separate all the houses. And if it's a three deck sealed Alliance, you're basically going to have nine pods in front of you at the end of it. Mm-hmm. So then what I would do is I'm then going to put down the stats on a piece of paper. And this is where the paper comes out. So I'm going to, let's say the first pod is, I'll just actually grab from my video. So if you happen to look at my video while you're listening to this, the paper here will be the same. So I had Unfathomable one, because there was more than one Unfathomable house. So the first thing, and then I would go through it. So I'd look at the thing. How many creatures are in this house? So I note down the number of creatures in a pod. Next thing I do is, how many Ember Pips are in the pod? Ooh. Then I'm going to go, how much Ember Control cards are in this pod? How many Board Control cards are in this pod? How many, because it's Unfathomable, Disruption cards are in this pod? And then another one is, how many efficiency cards? You can put both or whichever one you feel is more relevant. It's not every pod will have disruption or efficiency,
right?
But do that. And then I put, because it's a Winds of Exchange, how many token generating cards are in this pod?
Nice.
And so now I have numbers stating these things for this pod. And then I proceeded to repeat this and writing down each thing. So the next one was Star Alliance 1, because there's Star Alliance 2. Then there's Equidon. And so something could happen where, like, when I got to my Equidon pod, I instantly was like, whoa, this is a really cool pod. So I put a star next to it because I liked the pod without even looking at the stats that existed in it.
Nice.
Fun fact, I didn't end up using that pod when I made my decision in the end, but it stood out to me right away. So you want to note things like that. You could also note any standout things that are like, oh, I really like that these two cards exist in this pod. Like things that insularly in the pod are going to be strong, or something that is desirable for you to do. Maybe there's some chase cards in there and you want to actually play these as part of it. And that's, mm-hmm. and that's a consideration. So maybe make any little notes beside that of interesting things that draw you or attract you to that pod. So now after you have all this, you're going to have a sheet that has all these numbers and they're all going to be aligned. So you're going to have, see how much creatures are in each house or each pod, how much Ember Pips are in each pod, how much Ember Control, how much board control, etc. as you go through. Then what I did is I circled the top two of each stat, so I could know these are the highest that exist within all my pods. So then I could actually look at the data rather than just like thumbing through all the cards.
Sure.
Where it's not really actionable or easy to keep track of all that. It's now here on paper and I can see all the numbers together. And that's actually how I started deciding. Because there's B1s where like, well, this has the most pips, but I'm noticing it's lacking, like it doesn't have any other top stats. But this one has is second, and there's two other things. It's tied for first or it's tied for second.
Nice.
So therefore, you're starting to maybe choose the most. And that way, especially I think in Winds of Exchange, the Ember control is less. So you need to be conscious of when you're building your pod, are you building out of not having any Ember control? So you kind of want to like, you know what, I need to include at least this pod, one of these two pods, because they have the most Ember control. And then you got to look, does it have anything else that is high as well? So I know I'm checking off something else that would be advantageous to it.
I was going to ask, so do you have different categories that you value higher than others? If like a single pod has the most of something, you might still take it even if it doesn't have the most in other thing.
So yeah, I think board control is one that goes on the top. I want to have a robust amount of board control. That definitely for sure is a big one. I was really struggling between both my Unfathomable ones because they both had really strong board control. That one was really hard. I think I ended up going, I can't remember now. There was one that had, I can't remember if I used it or not, but it had the cultist, but I wasn't going to be using the cultist token.
Right.
So I was debating using that pod because it had really high stats. And it was, so out of the five things, there's like one, two, three, four, five things I'm looking at. It had circles for four of the five categories.
Whoa.
But it means I'd have two dead cards. So I wouldn't be able to really get out the creature, and I wouldn't be able to use the artifact.
Yeah, that's
so
hard.
So I had to make a decision, and I didn't end up going with it. I went with the other Unfathomable, I remember now, because it had great disruption, and I liked the idea of having some control aspect, but it had low Ember control. So it was a really tough decision on that factor, but you're just going through and deciding what you want to do. Like, you can decide, do you care about creating lots of tokens? That is a valid question. Because even though you're using Winds of Exchange, does it make sense within the pods that you're building having a token? Do you like the tokens you have at your disposal?
Right.
Things like that. That's even its own discussion, because the rule is you can use any token in your Sealed Alliance deck that you open as long as you're using one pod from that. So if you have an overlapping houses, you could use house a pod from like deck one, but then the token from deck three, as long as you're using a pod from that deck. So you make all those decisions based on the stats you have, and then you put together the deck you want. And then, of course, you can play around and iterate into another one that you're maybe debating if it didn't come together the way you want. But that's the way I'm going about Sealed Alliance, is from a statistical standpoint. So just analyzing, you have no software to use. This is just counting cards that have things that you do. So there could be some cards that maybe have more strength because they're like a creature that does it. So that means as long as they survive, you can do it over and over again. You may want to even have a subset of like how many board control or Ember control cards that are on creatures. So therefore they could be used over and over again. Or there's the fact that they have to survive to be used. So there's the double edge where an action card, it works no matter what. So maybe you could put like action card versus non-action card for those stats if you wanted to go really deep in. For the sake of time, if you've never done this before, I would highly recommend maybe not going to that level yet till you get used to the system. It took me almost a full 30 minutes to do this.
How long did it take you to put all of this together? So I think 30 minutes is the amount of time that we get at the beginning of a Sealed Alliance event.
Yes. So that's what I would say, is it's going to probably take you most of the time. You can maybe get it done in 20 minutes. Because I'm obviously was recording a video while I did this, and I was looking at the timestamp, so I'm talking out loud, so I'm also not as efficient as if I was just doing it on my own. So that's just something to keep in mind. Is I would say go maybe more simple if you've never done this before, or maybe do a practice run at home if you want. Give a reason to open up three decks and have a purpose beyond just cracking a pack and scanning, and then you can see time yourself how long it takes. Obviously, the more individual pods you have that don't have overlapping houses, it may actually be easier to make decisions or more difficult, as well as the more overlapping you have it doesn't really make a difference. It's going to be difficult because you're like, oh, is this one better than this one? But I really wanted to have Unfathomable, but I have three Unfathomable ones. Which one do I choose? Like it starts becoming the debate is going to be difficult, and analysis paralysis is very real. That's why I kind of just started looking at stats as a reason. And then when I couldn't decide, look at the pod itself and what do you like in the pod? Like, what do you want to play? Maybe is a good a good other thing. Like when in doubt, which one looks more fun, I think is a really good default.
Absolutely. And so do you take into account, you talked before about the fact that there were some dead cards in your deck because they actually synergized with a token. Do you take into account what the token can do in your stats? Basically, like some of them, like Amberling, gives you an amber if it survives. Like it sure. could be spent or...
I did not have that benefit. So I'll tell you the three tokens that were in this. One was Explorer. Is that the Star Alliance 2-power reap? Look at the top card of your deck. Discard it.
I can tell you that in a second.
And then the other one was the Cultist. Obviously, I mentioned that one, which is 2-power. It's action, sacrifice yes. Cultist, exhaust or ward a creature. That's the Cultist. So mm-hmm. it was Explorer?
Yep.
Yep. So I had Explorer, I had Cultist, and then I had Warrior, which is the Brobnar.
Yep.
You cannot use it to reap unless there are no enemy creatures and it's 4-power. My Brobnar house, I knew I was choosing the Brobnar house in this. Like as soon as I opened it, I was like, okay. It had, I think it was, it had Brick Nasty and 2 Geds. So nice. The Geds are destroyed, ready all your Brobnar creatures and enrage them. And with the Warrior token, I was just like, yeah, this is just going to be too good. So totally. I can't not choose this house. Like I knew it was going to get on board real strong. Like it didn't have strong stats anywhere else, but I knew it was going to create a really strong board presence because it had the most creatures. Plus I had the token. So that was where I knew I was going with the Brobnar pod and the Brobnar token. There was no debate. Like that was the most easy decision for me.
Funny enough, when
I finished my build, I looked at what I did and I essentially built, I chose one deck and just took out one pod. And I didn't do it intentionally. So
right.
I just put three together. And afterwards, I'm like, oh, wait, these two actually naturally occur together. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Did it make it easier for you that you chose your first pod so quickly? Because you talked a lot about stats before and the fact that like, if I was looking at a page of stats, I feel like I would absolutely get lost in which ones I would choose. But if you have one to start with, then you know what you need to complement.
So the fun thing is when you're counting things, you're going to be obviously noticing what cards exist within it. So that was one thing that happened is as I went that, I was like, holy crap. I'm like, I love it. It's like, so fun fact, friends, I love Brobnar in Winds of Exchange, but I not only love Brobnar, I think Brick Nasty is one of my favorite cards to ever exist in
love
the game.
It.
And I've been blessed to have a lot, and not only a lot, I seem to get Brick Nasties with draw pips on them. Like a lot of Brick Nasties with draw pips, which is sweet.
Jealous.
So I'm still looking for the band deck. I don't have a band deck yet. That's what I'm looking for. But like that is the ultimate thing of what I want from Winds of Exchange is I want a band deck.
Totally.
I love this Brobnar so much. So yes, when I see Brobnar, I have an affinity to want to play Brobnar and use it. I have so many decks with Brobnar that I'm also very familiar with it. So going into Sealed of a new set, if there's something you've already opened and you have seen it quite a bit and got experience with it, you may want to lean to that because you understand how that house plays.
Right.
So yes, there will be your first pod. You can actually not look at any of the stats and choose a pod because you like this one the most and then find out, okay, what does this pod bring? Okay,
totally.
What is it lacking? That's actually probably more where you want to see what is by using this pod, what have I not put a lot of in my deck? And I need to right. make sure the other two pods will balance that out. And then you start looking at synergies. Like what would this synergize with? But like I said, if you don't want to go to that level, maybe you don't like analyzing at that depth of just reading cards and how they interact. You can just go on stats they provide for an overall experience.
It's so funny. Like, I can't wait to start talking about Constructed Alliance because, like, there's so many similarities, but, like, so many things that are different because of the fact that your possibilities are endless. Like, this sounds like you're making Sealed Alliance seem much more approachable to me because of how much experience I've had with Constructed Alliance.
Yeah, it's essentially the same thing, except you don't have control over your card pool the same way. But you do have control over understanding what each pod is going to bring to the table, which is essentially what you look at. Because I mean, why don't we just segue right into the Construct Alliance here? Because there is a point of things that you'll do, or at least for me, is I go, okay, well, I chose these two pods. By doing this, I actually realize, and this is very true, I think, for AOA, is I'll choose two pods that do really quickly. I'm like, oh wow, I don't have any Ember control. Is that something that's important to me? Because if so, I should maybe be looking at a Sanctum or Shadows pod for this last one that does some interesting things because they're the two pods within AOA for me personally that I think bring the greatest card pool of Ember control.
Absolutely.
So that's the way I look at it. Like I don't think it's a secret. I think I've mentioned this many times. Shadows, Sanctum, and Logos and AOA are my favorite house combination. I think you get the most interesting combination of elements that make a deck very playable.
Totally. So one of the ways that I love everything that you said, and some of the similarities that I can grasp onto is when I am trying to create an alliance constructed deck from everything I own, and like the possibilities are endless. Like it can feel overwhelming to start, but I love starting somewhere that like interests me or is intriguing or is my play style. And like one of the things when I was responding to Fighting Walloon, like asking me what I liked best about it is the fact that you can literally build anything, not just for the best deck possible, but for the best play experience possible. So for me myself, I love combos and I love when things go off and I love the like domino effect of cards. And so I look for that when I'm doing alliance, but I can start by picking a pod that I thought was interesting, that I've come across, that I like when I open my decks. And I've been doing so many Woe Alliance recently, like 3 decks already that I have built will be at Gen Con in the Alliance. Like I built 3 different Alliance decks that will be at the Gen Con Alliance because I love it so much. And the first place I start when I'm talking with these people is, what do you like? What is there? Like, you give me a place to start. What is your favorite gameplay? Do you have a favorite themed houses? Like, what are you looking for? What feels bad when you are lacking it? And so if you can come together with some of those concepts, you can start building even a first pod. So one of the guys, he was telling me that he really loved the look of Mars or Star Alliance because there were a handful of combos in there that were really cool and the token generation was really high. And I'm like, okay, great. So with that, any individual concept, and like you said, you love Brobnar. That's a fantastic place to start, especially in Winds of Exchange, because you know you're getting a lot of tools in Brobnar. And in mm-hmm. basically, if you're doing a code of Brobnar, you know you're getting a lot of board control and big beefy guys, but you might need to make up for that in other ways. So starting with what you like and what you know, even if it's a cool combo you want to try, like a deck that I've started, I looked for and am trying to find the Aether Spider Epic Poem combo. And Aether Spider is when your opponent generates amber, it gets captured by Aether Spider, and Epic Poem, that's in Mars. And Epic Poem is a Saurian action that you can exalt a creature and you get in your pool the amount of amber that's on that creature. And so like, that is a concept I came up with, and building a deck around a concept is a great place to start. And now it doesn't have to be as crazy or weird or hard to pull off as something like that. It can be as simple as, I like speed, I like efficiency, so I'm going to start with Logos. And then you find your favorite Logos pod. You find one you like to play, because Logos has different ways of showing speed, lots of draw or lots of archive. And at the level at which you're playing Alliance, you might not want to conflate the two. If you have a little bit of draw and a little bit of archive, they don't actually synergize as well. And so finding synergies has been an incredible part of Alliance as well. So you start with a pod you like, and then what is it lacking? So when I was helping my friend build his deck, he wanted Mars or Star Alliance. So I was basically looking for Mars with a lot of token gen that was available to me, obviously, because at this point there isn't a lot of time to get decks on the secondary market before Gen Con. And as you're hearing this, it would be impossible. But starting with what you have is the best way to go anyway, because if you have the time to iterate, you can find a Mars pod with what you like and even more token gen, or you can go into Star Alliance and have even more house synergies, and you can find efficiency in Star Alliance that way. So
can I just jump in real quick here, Sydney, because this is something that I find interesting and something that Jason, aka J Power, the reigning Alliance champion, has mentioned on numerous different things about iterating. And that is actually the best part of Alliance. So getting to actually play something and see how it functions and then go, oh, I can actually take out this version of Logos and put in this version, and I'm going to lose this and this, but I gain more of this and this. let's see how it plays. It's actually the testing part of swapping something in and seeing how the deck changed, the minutiae of the card dynamics from little things going, is the most fun. And I think actually over time, it's even more fun because it's a constantly evolving thing. Like the deck is essentially doing the same thing. You're just evolving the way it does it either more efficiently or more consistently, depending on the route you've decided to go to get to this end point of what you've decided. This is the core thing that the deck does. And time is a thing that will only make that more fun and interesting to do. And we're still such in such an infancy stage of doing this. So that's one thing to always keep in mind, is the iteration and acquisition of more things will create the ability to try something new. You'd be like, I got a new pod that fits exactly this Brobnar that I had, but it has this one more thing that I noticed I would have loved. Let's put it in. Let's play test it. Let's see what happens. Does it feel better? Does it feel worse? It's the weirdest feeling to swap a house because the deck feels exactly the same when you play it, but is also different.
Oh, yes.
What is absolutely your experience with that, Sydney?
Oh my God, that's a fantastic question. So I've had a very, very, very similar experience recently where I had a three pods that I absolutely loved and they were all from Woe. All I switched out was one token for a different token in the same set of three pods. It made literally the whole deck play differently. So in my three pods, I had Equidon and I had Saurian, and I could either go Prospector, the one power Equidon token that you can draw a card if it's destroyed.
The bee's knees of tokens, as far as people are concerned.
Or the other bee's knees, the Bellatorin Warrior, the five power two shield. And the coolest thing about that is that I had the situation where one of the other decks, so the deck with the third pod actually, is the one with the Bellatorin Warrior. This Saurian pod was a better Saurian pod and didn't have the training costs drawback card, and I could still play with the Saurian token. So like the problem is Equidon shined when I played with Prospector. Like Equidon was able to go off, but the Saurian pod fell short because it didn't actually have the big beefy tokens to capture Amber. And then the other way around was true too. When I had the Bellatorin Warrior, the Equidon was just, it ended up being too slow. My draw just absolutely died. And so I couldn't end up with these two amazing, fantastic pods in the same alliance deck because of simply which, like, one token benefited one and one token benefited the other. The play experience was so different, basically, with that minute of a change. But it made me learn that some tokens are much better suited to being with a whole alliance deck or a whole deck that revolves around them.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm definitely the most excited about building an alliance Winds of Exchange. And I'm just going to jump on this moment here to segue into this because I'm going about it way different, I think, than most people are. So I've made a conscious choice to not put my Woe decks into DOK.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go about building an alliance deck not using DOK.
That's amazing.
Which I think is, I'm actually really excited for this challenge because I'm going to basically get a spreadsheet and I'm going to do the stats thing like this, but it's going to be on a computer instead of a piece of paper because I have way more to go through.
Right.
And the truth is that when you are looking at stats for an individual pod, like we all hover over it, it tells us the stats. You go, oh, this one has 30. That's great. I recently built decks kind of not caring about having the highest. I was looking for cards. I wasn't looking for, like, I knew what the cards would do. So I started looking at that way. And I even started doing a thing where I went to the very bottom. Like when I'd say Worlds Collide is the most interesting way to look for pods because you could have a very low SAS deck because it has a Brobnar or something in it.
Yes.
It's the most swingy set. And then you have a really good pod that just stuck with two dogs, basically two donkeys.
Right.
And so I was actually trying to go below 60 and see, is there any cool pods here that aren't being utilized? Because then I get to use my collection. And I found some really cool things. I will say that building a Worlds Collide Alliance is the most difficult, especially if you want to have Star Alliance.
Sure.
Because Star Alliance is a victim of its own strength.
Sure.
So there's so many times that there's a deck that has a Science Officer Morpheus, and then it has the United Action Is that the one? Yes, United Action, which, and both are banned. There's so many cards that exist, and then Stealth Mode. Those three are very common within it, and you can have one pod that is literally really good, but it negates itself, and I actually hate that.
Yes.
I don't like the fact that the restricted list is denying a whole pod because it naturally occurred this way. Like,
absolutely.
It's the one thing I don't like about it, and I don't feel like those cards are even a thing anymore. Like, I don't think they all should exist in that way. Like, if you have all three, like, if it naturally occurs within the pod, why is that allowed?
I completely agree. Like, I have found the same issue in a handful of other situations, except, like, unfortunately, like, they're legacy situations. So it actually is unique and would otherwise probably never be seen. So it probably shouldn't happen. And so the ban kind of gets it correct by stopping me from using those pods. But I totally see your point. Like, your point is much more common. And your point makes it so that so many more decks are unusable. But one thing about Woe Alliance that is super insane right now is that nothing from the banned list is directed at Woe. So, like, that's the space that I love creating in the most, where like, complete freedom, 100% able to put together whatever I dream up.
My favorite thing about Woe, and I'm going to be honest, I wanted to build a Woe Alliance, and it's the Philly Vault Tour, which I think this is not a shocker to anyone who's heard anything that happened at Philly, is the magical Whirlpool Cleric Pincerator Alliance build. Like, that was the highlight. Like, I got so excited and inspired hearing that. I was like, oh my goodness. I'm like, this is maybe the coolest thing I've heard about Keyforge. Like, so, actually, like, I was like, I can't remember the last time I've been this excited about something that happened in Keyforge, was hearing about all of that.
You know, the number of people. So that happened because of an antiquities dealer, the Equidon creature that brings in like legacy and Maverick artifacts. The number of people that, like, the second they open an antiquities dealer deck, they're like, oh my God, what's in here? Which one is it? What can I do? And I did the same thing. So of all of the decks I've opened, I have one antiquities dealer and it has a library card in it. And I'm like, oh, this has got to be good. This is going to be like, this is basically the ability to do a library access in Woe, but like I haven't even put brain power to it because I opened it super recently. But I just, like, the antiquities dealer leaves so much room for experimentation and fun combinations that are otherwise incredibly unique to Winds of Exchange.
Yep. 100%. It is so cool. Like, I love it. Like, my first Woe deck that I opened in the very first display from the more recent one was an antiquities dealer, and I didn't even realize that it was a thing, and I love it. It's like, it's one of my favorite things, and the artifacts aren't even that crazy, but it's just so much fun. Like, I think it's a Howling Pit, an incubation chamber. Thank goodness I actually have Mars in the deck. And I can't remember the last one, but it's super fun, and I just love it. Like, I want to collect antiquities dealers decks just because, like,
oh yeah,
totally. For me, it's like, I went Quixel Stone, I wanted, and then I wanted Dark Ember Vault. I think Antiquities Dealer is the, like, I want to own as many of these as possible.
Right.
Just because it's so interesting the way that Keyforge comes together. And then, of course, it's going to create alliance possibilities.
Oh, definitely. And I wanted to jump back to something you mentioned earlier, because it is so incredibly relevant to Constructed Alliance, and that is using DOK. So SAS in particular, like, we've mentioned before, and a lot of people in the alliance community are don't tout SAS as the, like, way to search for your alliance decks, but the math is actually specifically broken for an alliance build in DOK. And I think that's a great thing. Like, it makes me not worry about the SAS of the deck I'm putting together, but the way that they're broken for alliance is two ways. One, anything with enhancement, so Mass Mutation and Forward, the card that is giving the enhancement is the one that is given the points in the SAS system, the arc. Because no matter what deck it's in, if that card is there, some other card in the deck is going to be enhanced with a pip. But because for Alliance, you can remove the Infomorph that gives the draw pips from the card that has received the draw pips, and the card that has received the draw pips doesn't have an increased point value for having it, that SAS is not reflected in your alliance build. And then also, like, we've been talking about creating Woe alliance decks, and specifically for Woe, the way that a token is currently calculated, when you create a Woe alliance, the actual alliance deck in DOK does not get a token. So the way that tokens are calculated isn't calculated for an alliance deck. So 100% of my alliance decks are actually much lower in SAS than my normal WoW decks because they get zero. They don't get any boost from their token card. So I kind of love right now that I am in the same position as you building or thinking about WoW without SAS, that for me, alliance, I'm thinking about it 100% without SAS.
And yeah, for me right now with WoW, like the way I'm doing is just going to look at all the things that exist and create a spreadsheet and find out what has the stuff I'm interested in. I mean, I'll probably do the thing where I'm going to find one pod that I really like and then figure out a way to conceptualize around that or a few and start getting a couple together. But the one thing that DOK does provide when you have a vast collection is the fact that you can search for card numbers, multiples, things like that, and find out what decks you have exist these. And so it's a great way of searching everything you have that you're looking for specific things and seeing what your possibilities are. I don't think you necessarily need to hover and see what the SAS is, because the truth is you're looking to build something based on a concept. And the SAS really doesn't matter at that point, because you're looking for individual cards that are going to provide things to an end game that you want. Like you've seen my current brew that I'm really, I'm not going to state it explicitly what it is, but I'll just say what's fun about it that it does is I'm trying to build a deck that I do not forge keys using any Ember.
Yes.
And Sydney, you've been helping me with this, and it's really fun, and I haven't quite cracked it yet. I'm just at the beginning, and I'm going to be taking, this is going to be probably a 2024 concept. I'm going to really take my time with it, because the problem is most, I think it's three different languages make up the deck. And that's actually the problem I've been noticing, is because I'm planning on probably doing Alliance in Vegas.
Oh yeah.
I'm having the issue of, I don't want to put time into decks in foreign languages just in case those have not been approved or sanctioned yet.
Yeah, that's so hard.
And most of my decks, what I want to go to, they have a foreign language deck. Like I have a bunch of different foreign language decks that have really interesting pods that would complete, and I have to just let them be, and they're going to be a 2024 idea. I love the idea that I can get them made into English. Like the fact that they said that is so exciting for me, because I have a few really cool ones that I would like to have converted into English versions so that I can utilize them. But yeah, it's fun. Like honestly, like going about it with the concept, like I even did it the other night. I just chose Coda and I started to think, what do I want to do? Like that's the best question to ask. It's not what has high SAS that I'm putting together. It's like, what do you want to do? How do you want to play?
Because like that is how, that's one of the reasons I have been loving creating alliance for other people and working with other people, because I can like, my brain doesn't need 30 alliance decks. As much as I love the idea of it, I enjoy the creating of the deck. And so when I'm working with someone and they say, I want XYZ, and I can be like, awesome. And then I start looking for XYZ. That gives me something to go off of. And then I can fill in the blanks with what's missing. And that's the best part of it. And I do have a couple of different decks going. Like right now, I wanted to put together a Saurian Sanctum Brobnar deck, because I just, the idea of having like all these beefy creatures on the board, and with WoW and the control in Brobnar, the amber control in Brobnar, that's actually kind of feasible. So like I've been iterating on a deck right now, and it's just so much fun to be able to do the crazy things in Alliance.
Yeah, totally. It's cool. Like I think the other night I put something together where I decided I wanted to do a battle fleet deck, but I didn't care about key abduction. I wanted the battle fleets and a library access with phase shifts strictly to hold my hand and not to generate keys, but to be like, I have a huge hand and now I'm in control of how I want to play for the next little bit. Like I built it on that basis. Like I knew I wasn't going to have a key abduction because I don't have that accessible right now, but I wanted it to go library access, phase shift, battle fleets to just have, it's actually for the third house, the house, which is my untamed. Which is an insane untamed house.
Oh my God.
And I wanted to have all the cards, because when I play that untamed deck naturally, I'm holding off playing untamed till I have a full grip of untamed to go off. So I thought, wait, what if I just crafted that and I actually have all my untamed?
Oh my God.
In my hand, and I could do it. So I started thinking of it in that way, which was really fun. And it doesn't have any Ember control. And that's not the idea. It's like, I want to go faster than you and then do what I want to do.
Yes.
And it's really interesting to go about this. So I still got to test that one. And I'm sure you and I will get around to doing that at some point.
For sure.
But it's really fun to just be like, I like what this house does. How can I complement it? And in what way would I complement what this house does? So I essentially knew one, and then I took the other two to support it. And the one thing I have noticed with Alliance, there's one sort of reigning concept that exists here, is that the ability to draw cards or archive cards to draw more cards is really where the format is leaning towards right now. The current meta is, how can I be more efficient?
Yes.
That's the way it is. And then you have concepts that will work off the fact that you're in more control of what you can do and play with. That's essentially where it is right now. Except for Woe. I don't know if Woe is quite there right yet.
So I love that you say that, because Woe is doing it with tokens. Like, the amount of times so far for this Brobnar Saurian and Sanctum deck, like, it's actually accidentally turned into like token spam mania. Like, I will have 10 Bellatorin Warriors on the board, and like, I go through my deck 3 or 4 times, and yes, I may miss a card or two, but because I have like all 10 on the board, I can choose which ones I'm sacrificing for XYZ, or fighting into your things so that they die, or, you know, like, it's a small form of archive, because if with that many on the board, plus my hand, if that card is going into my discard pile, once I flip, I'm getting back to it very quickly. So it's the efficiency comes in being able to get through your deck really quickly, and then being able to control what tokens are out. Now, I understand that not all Woe decks create token spam in that way, but with the Alliance, you can lean it in that direction.
Totally. I mean, I very much am, my mind's right now thinking, I want to find a good Mars token to do a kaboom where I just spam, throw them all in my archives, and then I can have a grip of cards to play moving forward. Like, that is
amazing.
That is a concept that's in the back of my mind right now.
Totally.
It's super cool. I think the potential for Woe Alliance is really interesting. That's the thing I like. And I think that you should not use SAS actually as a means for it. You need to find ideas you like, and then figure out a way that it has it. And I think just finding out cards that can provide the stats like I did for Seal Alliance might be the best way, because right now the scores are still settling. Like, we've only had the first iteration of SAS scores with Woe, so they're not totally ironed out. They're not have any strong tournament backing information yet.
Right.
So they're still in a point where you can just take them as, this provides Ember control, this provides board control, and see how much you need.
Tip and trick for using DOK for Alliance: if you search for the name of the, so like, you're within your other criteria that you want, maybe you want a Brobnar pod, or maybe you want like whatever other criteria you're putting in for the pod that you're looking for, even if it has these cards, add to that criteria looking for a card that gives enhancements. Because if you add, so Mass Mutation, that would be like Infomorph, but like for Star Alliance, like the Zytar, if you add him, I think he gives like 2 draw pips and 1 other pip. Like, if you add him to your criteria, then what you're doing is you are hoping and probably running into decks that receive those draw pips likely in the pods that you are looking to add to your Alliance deck. So in that way, you are getting more enhancements. And let's say nothing comes up, or you're not using that house, there are a handful of different cards in each house that give the pips. Add those card names to your criteria for what you're searching for in DOK.
My favorite one that goes on that is Steward Suuziani, which is the Equidon creature that gives 2 Ember pips and a draw pip. That's one of my favorite enhancements. I think that is such a powerful thing. The card itself is not great, where the Zytar is actually great in the fact that it's 4 power, 1 armor. So as a body on the board, it's actually quite a substantial creature to help you. The Steward, I find, just is giving you such high value, because getting more pips and more, I mean, I guess you could also view it as there's a lot of Infernuses in the wild with Alliance to a degree. So the more pips you have in that regard, drop or Ember pips are going to be potentially used against you. I've thought about that actually with one of my decks. I'm like, if I put this into Alliance, like, cool, it's Arm the Plebeians, but it has 3 Ember Pips on it. Do I really want to include that?
Oh my God, that's crazy. Totally understand.
Mm-hmm. So there's pros and cons for everything. So I think that's going to do it for this episode, City, unless you have something else you want to add to wrap up this discussion.
No, I think this was fantastic. And I'm just, I'm always so excited to talk about Alliance. So if anyone wants to like reach out and chat with us or get an Alliance discussion going on our Discord, like it's something that like we are happy to help like kickstart people's like discovery of Alliance.
Maybe we'll have to create a more formal way of doing this so people can reach out. Teaser trailer, wink, wink. All right. So before we jump into Help from Future Self, I think it's time to announce the winner of this week's draw, which is going to be a display of Winds of Exchange. Oh, how fitting after this discussion about how great Winds of Exchange is for Alliance that we're giving away a display. So Sydney, without further ado, let's announce the winner.
The winner of our last display is Alexander Weisberger, All Mountain 52. Congratulations.
Congratulations. You will be getting a display of Winds of Exchange being sent to you. And wow, lucky, lucky person. So, of course, we cannot end an episode of Help from Future Self without the titular segment. We call this one
Help from Future Self.
Sydney, you have one for us this week, don't you?
I sure do. And I love that you were chatting earlier about how Infernus and your multiple pips is like, so there are a lot of pips in Winds of Exchange, but one of my favorite cards in Winds of Exchange right now is Pax Soriana. It is a Saurian action and it has two amber pips on it and it says play, ward each creature. And yes, that means both on your side and your opponent's side. But one of the things I found, like I see this card and the first thing when I first learned about this card, like the first thing I would think is, oh man, Infernus bait right here. But what I have found to my incredible, incredible benefit, it is perfect against Infernuses because if their Infernus is on the board, they aren't hysteria-ing it back into their hand unless they like use it to fight or something. But if they've played it that turn, it's just so easy to keep things on their board. And on top of that too, you get to plan when you play it. So if you're using a fight heavy deck, which Sanctum has a ton of burst and is very beefy to fight with, and Brobnar is incredibly good in a lot of other ways, has a lot of other tools, and is fighting all the time. This card does happen to be in my Sanctum Brobnar Saurian Alliance deck, but because of that, I am constantly keeping their board small, and then I'm warding a line of 10 Bellatorn warriors. So this card, even though it looks terrifying because it wards their side, and it has Infernus Bait written all over it, it's actually a very good strategic card once you get some practice with it.
I agree. I've had some times where I have to be like, wait, don't play it now. Actually, should maybe wait a turn because this can happen. And a nice thing if you want to use it in terms of benefiting you and not your opponent as much is crushing charge with it is amazing. Ooh. Because then you can four or less and all your bigger Brobnars or Dinos are going to survive. And then their board will be significantly smaller.
Totally.
As a result. So it's really nice. Again, with the Bellatone Warrior, it would escape the crushing charge. Same sort of idea. It's a really nice combo piece with it because you can wipe out stuff before you go into your side of things. So it's pretty cool. I do really like the card. But be forewarned, you can also hose yourself really badly. But it is definitely a high skill card because there is a it's very Winds of Exchange, actually. There's the trade-off. You're having to give something to get something.
Exactly. That's so true in so much of Winds of Exchange. And I love the fact that setting things up to be beneficial to you when you use a card that would otherwise benefit both sides, like mass buyout or even, oh God, there's so many. I love that about Winds of Exchange.
Yeah, me too.
Cool. So we are on Discord. The link is in the show notes. And you can find me on TCO and Discord as SC Steel. So Blake, where can people find you and what do you got going on?
Well, be sure to check out my YouTube. There is a link in the show notes for the Sealed Alliance tips and tricks, I think I called it, or strategy, something like that. It's a really fun. I really enjoy doing it. There may be a point you want to fast forward. I kind of set it up and then I'm literally counting everything, which if you don't like, you can then skip to the end and see how things played out. But the setup is there. And as well, you can find me on TCO as Boulevard Blake, and also on Discord now. So Discord made me drop my number sign 3840, which was, I felt like, my thing, and now I don't have it. They took that from me. So I'm just Boulevard Blake on Discord right now. So you can find me there. That's BLVD Blake.
Fantastic. Well, this was an amazing discussion about Alliance. I will always talk more about it. And we will be back next week with another episode of Help from Future Self. Until then, stay forging.